This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi guys, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 27, Lauren McConnell, Part 1. 5-year-old Lauren Michelle McConnell was a happy, healthy, vibrant child until she was unjustly torn away from her loving mother in Tennessee. In Indiana, Lauren's father and stepmother refused to allow her mother to see her, and along with 3 members of her stepmother's family, spent several months physically and sexually abusing Lauren until she ultimately starved to death in March of 2010. 5 people were convicted in connection with Lauren's death, and 3 of them remain behind bars to this day. This is the disturbing story of Lauren McConnell. My sources for this week's episode were notjustforlawyers.com, Justice for Kaylee, Find a Grave, Wikipedia, Mothers of Lost Children, Indiana, The Star Press, Domestic Violence Kills, Indiana, Associated Press, The Dream and Demon, The Walker Royston Report, Remembering Lauren McConnell, 10-3-2004 to 3-9-2010 Facebook Group, and Little Lauren Facebook Group. Before I jump into this week's episode, I want to give a shout out to my 2 most recent patrons, Allie B. from Loganton, Pennsylvania, and Anna P. from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Thank you both so much for your support. Every pledge brings me that much closer to my goal of devoting myself full-time to the podcast and Suffer the Little Children blog, even after quarantine. If anyone else would like to help support the show, please go to www.sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com. and click Become a Patron in the upper right corner. Speaking of quarantine, I know some kids have already started the school year, and my 2 will be starting 7th and 11th grade in a week or so. I've opted for virtual lessons for both of them because I'm guessing schools will be closed before long anyway, but whether your kids are participating in distance learning or physically going back to school, I wish them a great school year. Everybody stay safe out there, and wear your masks. Now let's get into Lauren's story. You might want to pause here and grab a box of tissues and maybe a punching bag because this story is as heartbreaking as it is infuriating. Twenty-year-old Amber Delene Maddox and 23-year-old Ryan Neil McConnell were married on March 25, 2000 in Grant, Indiana. At the time, Amber had a 1.5-year-old son, Cameron. Less than 6 months later, Amber and Ryan welcomed their first daughter, Kaylin Ann, on September 11, 2000. Cameron was 6 and Kaylin was 4 when their baby sister, Lauren Michelle McConnell, was born on October 3, 2004, in Muncie, Indiana. When Amber and Ryan split up in July of 2006, Ryan moved to Arkansas, where he filed for divorce in November of 2006. At the time, Amber, along with her 3 kids, were living in Tennessee. Amber tried to get legal representation for the divorce proceedings, but she was unable to afford an attorney. Because she was not a resident of the state of Arkansas, Amber was not eligible for legal aid there, and because the divorce was taking place in Arkansas, she couldn't apply for legal aid in Tennessee either. She was forced to represent herself. In a later telephone interview, Amber told the Star Press, "I did not have the financial resources to have an attorney. Ryan had an attorney and I did not. There was no other reason he got custody. I was not an unfit mother. I never hurt my children." The divorce became final in May of 2007. Despite Amber being, by all accounts, an excellent mother, which has never been disputed, Ryan was awarded full custody of Kaylin and Lauren. Adding insult to injury, Amber was ordered to pay Ryan $104 a week in child support. She and Ryan, however, made a verbal agreement that Lauren would stay with her mother and Amber would not pay child support. While Lauren lived with her mom, she was a healthy, chatty, but well-behaved 4-year-old girl who met all of her developmental milestones on time, including being fully potty trained. In October of 2007, Ryan remarried. His bride, 22-year-old Brittany Lee McConnell, was the stepdaughter of Ryan's cousin, Robert E. Lee. Yes, that was the man's real name. I assume no relation to the Confederate general. Brittany entered her marriage to Ryan with a 1-year-old son who I'll call K.L. as he is still a minor. Within a year, the couple also had a daughter together who I'll call H.M. Once Ryan and Brittany were married, Brittany nagged Ryan relentlessly about his verbal agreement with Amber, pushing him to take Lauren and demand child support from his ex-wife. Lauren lived with her spineless father and her wicked stepmother from December of 2007 through June of 2008, went back to her mom in Tennessee for a few months, and then returned to Arkansas from October through December of 2008. When Amber picked Lauren up in December, she saw multiple bruises all over her 4-year-old daughter's body, and she was alarmed to note that Lauren had regressed in toilet training, frequently wetting her pants. Concerned, Amber made a report to Child Protective Services about her daughter's injuries and regression. In a later interview, Amber said, "She had bruises on her. I asked her what happened, and she said she didn't know. I took pictures of the bruises, but they were old and not good quality pictures. Child Protective Services in White County, Arkansas, said it was not enough." When questioned, Ryan and Brittany McConnell told CPS investigators that the bruises were caused when Lauren bumped into a trash can. The case was closed. Soon after the CPS report, Ryan questioned Amber about whether she had called the agency, which she confirmed. He then asked if Amber would like to keep Lauren,
like, forever.
If only that was the way this story went. While living with her mother, Lauren stopped having potty accidents. She only regressed while living in Ryan's home. By this time, Amber had remarried to a man named Jackie Huggins, who brought into the relationship his 2 sons, JJ and Zach, and twin daughters Cora and Candace. Altogether, Amber and Jackie had 7 children between them. Ryan, Brittany, and their children moved to Indiana in March of 2009, where Brittany picked up where she had left off bullying Ryan to enforce the court child support order because, she said, they needed the money. She also told Ryan he was a worthless, good-for-nothing father and that he didn't love Lauren because he let her stay with her mother. From Indiana, Brittany called authorities in Tennessee and requested a welfare check on Lauren, saying her husband was the custodial parent and his ex-wife refused to return Lauren, which was not true. After stooping this low, she managed to stoop lower still in August of 2009 when she convinced Ryan to drive to Tennessee and pick up his daughter without telling Amber ahead of time. With no warning, one day, Ryan and 2 law enforcement officers showed up on Amber's doorstep, custody order in hand, and snatched Lauren out from under her nose. The next time Amber saw her daughter, she would be brain dead in a hospital bed, just hours from death. Again, adding insult to injury, Ryan went to court to demand back payment of child support from May of 2007 forward. At that time, Amber was given an address in Winchester, Indiana as a contact address for her ex-husband and her daughters. Little did she know, Ryan, Brittany, and their family had left Winchester earlier that summer, moving to the town of Farmland, where the population as of 2010 was 1,333 people. Shortly after Lauren arrived in Indiana, the family picked up again and moved to Muncie, a larger city in Delaware County, with a population of approximately 70,000 at that time. Along with Ryan, Brittany, Brittany's 4.5-year-old son, K.L., 5-year-old Lauren, 9-year-old Kaylin, and the couple's 16-month-old daughter, H.M., 3 others lived in the home at 2304 South Ebright Street. 43-year-old Robert E. Lee, Ryan's cousin and Brittany's stepfather, Robert's wife and Brittany's mother, 43-year-old Angela Rice Lee, who went by Angie, and Brittany's sister, 19-year-old Samra Lee. Brittany told Ryan around this time that her stepfather, Robert, had molested her when she was a child. Even so, the couple seemed to have no qualms about living with Robert along with their 4 children, 3 of whom were young girls. Amber was not notified that her daughters had moved, nor was she provided a new telephone number. She tried to reach Ryan several times by email, pleading with him to tell her where they were living, but the only person she was able to reach was Brittany, who told her they were still living in Winchester. Brittany, who at this point sounds like a cartoon supervillain, demanded that Amber pay the back child support she owed Ryan and to stop trying to contact them. At one point, Amber was so desperate to get in touch with her daughters that she called a number she had for Ryan's sister. Ryan later returned the call and told her never to call the number again, and that when Kaylin and Lauren were old enough, they could decide for themselves if they wanted to see their mother. It would later turn out that the adults in the McConnell Lee house spent months drilling into Kaylin and Lauren's brains that their mother neither wanted nor loved them. Amber, who loved and missed her girls desperately, threatened contempt charges if Ryan did not allow Kaylin and Lauren to call her. She received exactly one phone call, this one from a restricted number in December of 2009, during which she spoke with her two daughters for a total of 8 minutes. Then she heard Brittany say, "You've talked long enough," and the call disconnected. That was the last time Amber ever spoke with Lauren. Amber attempted to locate the girls, even driving from Tennessee to Indiana in January of 2010, but when she pulled up at the address she was given in Winchester, accompanied by police, the house had been abandoned for some time. Amber told a news station by telephone,
"I sent numerous emails begging them to give me their address. I was told they were living in Winchester. I heard they were living in farmland. I heard Fort Wayne. I heard Muncie. I heard everything. I was kept from my daughter for 6 months. I looked everywhere for them for 6 months."
Lauren turned 5 in October of 2009. During the last months of Lauren's life, she was relentlessly abused by her stepmother, Brittany, and step-grandfather, Robert. They would hit Lauren on the palms of her hands and the soles of her feet with a stick, and then force her to perform jumping jacks for 5 to 50 minutes at a stretch. At times, they would not allow her to stop until she began throwing up. Other punishments favored by Brittany and Robert included forcing Lauren to run long distances without stopping, making her hold heavy objects, such as canned vegetables, with arms outstretched for long periods of time without a break, and hitting her on the back of her legs with wet rags to avoid bruising, a tactic Robert later said he had learned on the television crime drama Criminal Minds. That happens to be my 16-year-old son's favorite show, so I asked him if he remembered that episode, but he didn't. He's now re-binging the entire series for the second time this summer, just to determine if that detail exists. Brittany was also sadistic in other ways with her stepdaughter. She force-fed Lauren until Lauren would vomit, and then Brittany would beat her for vomiting. Ryan and Brittany claimed that Lauren began exhibiting behavior and mental issues immediately upon moving into their home in August of 2009, although the issues they reported had never come up while Lauren was in her mother's custody. From Ryan's probable cause affidavit,
"They reported Lauren would talk little. She would climb the wall like a wet cat if they tried to give her a shower. She would pee and poop in her pants so much that they started putting her in diapers even though she had been potty trained for 3 years. She would store food in her cheeks. She would mutilate her dolls. She started biting herself and her siblings. She would bite them badly and repeatedly. She then began playing with her stool. She would get stool from her own diapers and put it on her siblings and laugh about this. Lauren would smear it in their hair and try to put it on her dad. They reported this is the only time Lauren would laugh. Asked if they sought medical attention related for this alarming behavior, they reported no."
The affidavit continued,
"The more time Lauren spent in the custody of Ryan and Brittany, the more her behaviors became increasingly bizarre. There were reports of rocking and staring at the wall for hours, repeating, 'I hate myself.' She was reported to eat food out of trash cans. She would eat her own vomit. She would wander the house at night and not sleep. Lauren was losing weight due to no appetite. She even began to eat her own feces. She was reported to see little blue bunnies that kept her awake at night, telling her to do bad things. This included stabbing Daddy. Lauren was found with both a butcher knife and scissors during this time. Ryan and Brittany noted that they believed Lauren to be a victim of past physical or sexual abuse from Amber, but yet did nothing to report this or try to receive help. These reports of Amber abusing Lauren were not substantiated."
Ryan said that one day in December of 2009, he came home from work to find Lauren with her hands full of feces, trying to smear it on him and her siblings. They also reported that Lauren had taken to choking herself, touching her genitals, and exhibiting sexual behavior, saying she would
stick her Barbie doll way up inside her.
Ryan's uncle, Ronald, lived next door to the McConnell home in Muncie. He said that Lauren was very sweet and happy when the family first arrived, but around December of 2009, his great-niece began to swear, her behavior changed noticeably, and she rapidly lost weight. Ryan told his uncle that Lauren had an eating disorder, explaining there was a
prescription they was supposed to get for her or something.
Through January of 2010, Ronald noticed that Lauren's behavior and health seemed to be worsening. She wouldn't run, smile, or hug him, and she seemed unhappy and very thin. To him, it seemed obvious his great-niece needed medical treatment. He said that almost every time he visited the family next door, Lauren was in the basement, where she slept on a mattress, and she would not come upstairs. Once Ronald said he went into the basement where Lauren told him she wasn't allowed to come upstairs. Brittany told Ronald that a doctor had told them Lauren had mental issues, so she was seeing a therapist. For whatever reason, it does not appear that Lauren's great uncle contacted CPS about his concerns. In November of 2009, the emergency room visits started. On November 19th, Brittany took Lauren to the St. Vincent Randolph Hospital emergency room, saying her stepdaughter had gotten soap in her eye, which was red and painful. At that time, Lauren's vital signs were normal. She weighed a perfectly acceptable 38 pounds, and no behavior problems or mental issues were noted. The emergency room doctor, Dr. Tom Huntington, wrote Lauren a prescription for antibiotic eye drops and for Benadryl to lessen her discomfort. After this, Brittany took to giving Lauren Benadryl every night to help her sleep. At this time, as throughout the remainder of Lauren's life, Brittany and Ryan reported that Dr. Aaron Shoemaker in Winchester, Indiana, was Lauren's primary care doctor, who they said she was seeing for her malnutrition issues. However, Dr. Shoemaker never once saw Lauren. At the November emergency room visit, no behavioral issues were mentioned. On December 8, 2009, Lauren was taken to Ball Memorial Hospital emergency room. Brittany told the doctor that Lauren had jumped off a bed and hurt a finger on her right hand. An X-ray was performed on Lauren's hand, revealing a buckle fracture in her middle finger and additional fractures in four of the fingers on that hand. Muncie Police Sergeant Jimmy Gibson, the lead detective on Lauren's case, said,
"I don't know why they didn't report that to CPS. People don't want to believe that parents would hurt their kids that way. They surely think the parents care, or they wouldn't bring a kid in with broken fingers."
During that emergency room visit, Brittany was told to follow up with Dr. Shoemaker or Central Indiana Orthopedics within 3 days. Lauren never received follow-up care for her hand injuries. Again, none of Lauren's supposed behavior or mental issues were mentioned. About a week after that ER visit, Ryan asked youth pastor Timothy Black of the Southside Church of the Nazarene to come outside to the family's van to try to convince Lauren to enter the church for a party. Pastor Black went outside, introduced himself to Lauren, and asked if she would like to come inside with the other kids and have some juice and cookies. However, from the moment he laid eyes on Lauren, he said she merely sat in the car seat, repeating the phrase,
"fucking bitch,"
over and over. After about 5 minutes, the pastor gave up, telling Lauren's father and stepmother they should seek professional help for the little girl very soon. Later, Lauren came into the church, where she sat at the back, staying as far as she could from everyone else, and stared into space. The pastor thought Lauren was very pale and appeared frail. At one point, Brittany somehow got it in her head that Lauren may be a hermaphrodite, so on February 4th, the couple took Lauren to the Southway Urgent Care Clinic. Because Ryan was embarrassed at the idea of his daughter possibly being a hermaphrodite, he told Bill Gosnell, RN, the nurse who examined Lauren, that his daughter experienced pain and burning when she urinated, and that her
vaginal area doesn't look normal.
He and Brittany told the nurse that Lauren was potty trained, but she had regressed to the point where she was wearing diapers again. However, none of Lauren's other supposed behavior problems were brought up. At this visit, the McConnells played the saints, saying they had just obtained custody of Lauren and had essentially rescued her from her mother's evil, abusive clutches. Ryan and Brittany again told doctors that Lauren was being treated for her obvious malnutrition by Dr. Shoemaker in Winchester. Sergeant Gibson later said,
"When questioned about the girl's weight, they acted concerned and blamed the natural mom, and they were convincing.
When they went to these healthcare providers, the healthcare providers questioned them, and they just gave good answers."
Testing determined that Lauren did not have a urinary tract infection, and the medical staff who did an external genital exam opined that nothing suggested Lauren was physically anything but a normal female. During the exam, this poor baby curled herself into a fetal position and punched herself over and over in the forehead. Ryan and Brittany told the staff that Lauren would hit herself hard enough to bruise her own face, so they were referred to Meridian Services for behavioral help and once again told to follow up with Dr. Shoemaker. On February 10th, Ryan and Brittany went alone to Meridian Services, where they saw counselor Karen Royer. For the first session, Ryan and Brittany were both present without Lauren and reported that Lauren had lost 3 pounds over the past 2 months, defecated in her brother's bed while he was in it, hit herself, and rocked back and forth for hours while chanting about hating herself. They also mentioned that she was hallucinating
blue bunnies that made her do bad things, eat out of the trash, make herself vomit and eat her vomit, smear and eat her feces, and also use the phrase fucking bitch often.
They told Karen that a month and a half before, Lauren had hidden a knife in her diaper, planning to stab Brittany. The second session took place on February 22nd, and this time Lauren was present along with Brittany and Ryan. This time the couple reported that Lauren hid a knife in her diaper to hurt Ryan, and Lauren told Karen she slept on a pallet on the floor because her bed was dirty from wetting and defecating in it. I guess they couldn't be bothered to change the sheets. Lauren also told Karen that her mom, who the 5-year-old referred to as Amber, made her take cold showers and wear dirty clothes, and that when she got in trouble, either her mom would bend Lauren's fingers back, or Amber would stick her own fingers in Lauren. None of these allegations against Amber were ever substantiated. It is most likely Lauren was coached to say these things against her mother. Despite the multiple ER visits, Lauren's clearly deteriorating health, the allegations against her mother, and the wide variety of highly suspicious injuries covering Lauren's body, nothing was reported to Child Protective Services until March 1, 2010, when the family had its third session with Karen Royer. During that appointment, Karen noted that Lauren was only awake for about 10 minutes and slept for the rest of the session, wearing her coat throughout the entire appointment. Brittany told Karen that Lauren had been hiding food in her diaper and sleeping only 3 hours a night. She assured Karen that they were giving the malnourished girl Pediasure and Gerber Jr. foods whenever possible. When Karen made the report to CPS, she said the little girl was exhausted, frail, and fragile. She said that throughout her many years working with children, she had never heard of behavior as bizarre as was reported for Lauren. Not only was that belated CPS report too little, too late for Lauren, but the allegations within were pointed at the wrong parent. Sergeant Gibson later said,
Child Protective Services was contacted by Karen Royer over allegations of sexual abuse that Ryan and Brittany made about the natural mother. The trouble is, Karen Royer believed Ryan and Brittany. They were all believable, but I don't suspect the natural mom at all. The natural mom hadn't had contact with the child since August, and here this allegation was coming up in February and March. When the natural mom had custody of her, her weight was normal, and the picture showed she was healthy and happy.
Why, you might wonder, did no one else report anything to CPS? Sergeant Gibson theorized that healthcare workers were essentially naive when dealing with Ryan and Brittany McConnell, who were well-practiced in lying.
And I think the healthcare providers have been duped in some of this.
On March 2, 2010, Ryan called Brittany from work during his lunch break between 11 and 11:30 a.m. Brittany told Ryan that Lauren fell at the dentist's office and was going to have a black eye, to which Ryan responded by asking,
Who hit her?
Brittany got mad, told him no one hit Lauren, and hung up. At about 1:30 p.m., Brittany called Ryan at work and told him Lauren needed to go to the hospital because she was holding her head and screaming about her head aching. Ryan told Brittany to bring Lauren to his place of work, and when they arrived and Lauren was still holding her head and screaming, Ryan went inside and called an ambulance. Lauren was taken to Ball Memorial Hospital by ambulance. Brittany accompanied Lauren in the ambulance, where one of the paramedics noted Lauren was
emaciated, all skin and bones,
and
sunken in her face,
and that the little girl's grave condition was obvious. She also had an abrasion by her left eye and bruising below her left eye and on the bridge of her nose, although the paramedics said the bruises were not
as fresh as what it should have been for a fall earlier in the day,
which was what they were told had caused Lauren's headache. The paramedic later testified to warning an emergency room nurse ahead of time about Lauren's
wasted state
to prepare the nurse for
what she was about to see,
saying Lauren
was very, very something that you don't expect to see here in America as far as nourishment or physical condition or anything.
The nurse at Ball Memorial said Lauren looked
severely emaciated and pale, and she whined or cried most of the time she was in my care.
The poor little girl looked awful, her lips were cracked, and her hair was thin. During the visit, Lauren had an accident in her pants, so Brittany found the nurse, told her Lauren needed to be cleaned up, and left the hospital. The nurse thought Brittany's behavior was unusual because the woman seemed
disgusted
and
annoyed by Lauren.
During that visit, Brittany told medical staff she didn't know if Lauren was actually hurt or just acting out, and she and Ryan mentioned that Lauren fell down a lot, got dizzy, walked into things, hit herself, screamed loudly when not paid attention to, and hadn't been eating a lot over the past several weeks. Again, they mentioned Dr. Shoemaker saying he had noted Lauren's weight 2 days earlier as 37.4 pounds. The clinical impression noted by staff in the Ball Memorial ER was malnutrition and behavior problems. Evidently, there was some disagreement amongst the medical staff in the emergency room about whether to conduct blood tests on Lauren, and her blood was not ultimately drawn. If it had been, she would certainly not have been discharged. After a normal CT scan, Lauren was sent home at about 5 p.m. Ryan took Brittany and Lauren home before going to his classes at Ivy Tech. At about 7 p.m., while Ryan was in a computer lab, Brittany contacted him by Facebook saying Lauren, who was not doing any better,
was suffering a mental breakdown.
Ryan left school and returned home, leaving a voicemail for Karen Royer before calling several mental hospitals trying to get Lauren evaluated, at which point he got an appointment at Valley Vista Health Systems in Greenwood. The drive took about 2 hours. When asked to sign a release of information for Dr. Shoemaker, the couple provided an invalid phone number and address for him, even though their other children had been seen in the past by the same doctor. At Valley Vista, a counselor named Ellen Harrington diagnosed Lauren with lack of supervision, malnutrition, failure to thrive, and medical neglect, and referred her to Riley Hospital for Children in Indianapolis. Sergeant Gibson said,
I believe CPS here contacted CPS in Tennessee because that's where the allegations were against Amber. Lauren was scheduled to be interviewed by SMART, Sexual Molestation and Abuse Response Team, me or Sergeant Linda Cook on March 3rd. We were doing it as a courtesy for Tennessee. That's when she went into Riley. I wish I could have talked to her. I hate it that I didn't.
At about 12:55 a.m. on March 3, 2010, Lauren arrived at Riley Hospital for Children, where medical staff noted the little girl was
malnourished, emaciated, dehydrated, and extremely lethargic.
Almost as soon as Lauren arrived at the hospital, her condition deteriorated further and she began suffering grand mal seizures, respiratory failure, and shock. Lauren weighed only 28 pounds, which is what an average 2.5-year-old weighs. Her bones protruded against her skin, and it didn't escape doctors' notice that the girl did not appear to have any subcutaneous fat or fat reserves. The mucous membranes in her mouth were dry, and when she cried, she couldn't produce any tears. Lauren was also covered in visible injuries. Her face, arms, and legs were bruised, and there was a cut on one thigh. The tips of her fingers appeared to be chewed off. The arrest affidavit reads,
most significantly, Lauren was found to be hypernatremic upon admission, which is an extremely high sodium level, or salt, in the blood. In this case, her level was 187. Anything over 152 is likely to cause seizure and death.
One of the physicians at Riley, Dr. Andrea Weist, consulted with various other doctors in an attempt to determine why Lauren's sodium level was so high, calling in a kidney specialist, a metabolism doctor, and an endocrinologist. All of the doctors
believed it was forcible salt intake or somehow taken in a lot of salt.
When questioned about Lauren's access to salt, Ryan and Brittany insisted there was only one salt shaker in their house, which was kept in a cabinet above the microwave, where Lauren couldn't possibly reach it. Police later found two partially filled 26-ounce containers of salt, one full container of salt, and a large spaghetti sauce jar with holes punched into the lid, also containing salt. Lauren's father and stepmother finally admitted to staff at Riley that Lauren had never been seen by Dr. Shoemaker, although they did say she was seen at Meridian Services once a week for the past 5 weeks, which was an exaggeration as Lauren herself had only seen the counselor twice. A psychological evaluation was done at Riley, during which Ryan and Brittany ran through their laundry list of bad behaviors that had supposedly started as soon as Lauren returned to their custody. According to the arrest affidavit,
Ryan and Brittany admitted that they sought no medical or psychological attention for these behaviors at the time. The psychological evaluation summarized that based on the history provided by father and stepmother, symptoms reported and observed over past 6 months are concerning for severe and persistent abuse and neglect. The patient's severe malnutrition is concerning, especially in light of the fact that no medical treatment was sought until the last month. Behavioral symptoms as severe and progressive as those reported by father and stepmother would have also warranted earlier evaluation by physician and mental health professionals.
At Riley, Lauren was seen by several medical providers, but her primary physician was Dr. Antoinette Lasky, a specialist in child abuse and, at the time, the head of the Indiana State Child Fatality Review Committee. By March 4th, Lauren was completely unresponsive. Her major organs had failed, and she was deemed brain dead. Ryan apparently couldn't be bothered to let Amber know what was going on with her daughter. Instead, a member of Ryan's extended family notified Amber of Lauren's plight, so Amber drove once again from Tennessee to Indiana. She arrived at the hospital in time to spend a few precious days with her little girl before Lauren was removed from life support. Neither Ryan nor Brittany was present in Lauren's room when Amber arrived. When Amber saw Lauren, she saw that her formerly happy, healthy daughter was now gaunt.
She had no meat on her bones, her cheeks were sunk in, her hair was chopped off, her foot was black, her hands were swollen, and you could see the outlines of her bones.
Amber stayed in the room until Lauren died. Lauren's older brother, Cameron, who Lauren called Bubby, came into his sister's room every night while she was on life support to say goodnight to Lauren and tell her he loved her. Lauren Michelle McConnell gained her wings on March 9, 2010. A hospital pastor noted that after Lauren was taken off the ventilator, when Brittany and Ryan left her room and went downstairs, they seemed to exhibit a sense of relief. A nurse also noticed that as Brittany and her family exited the elevator on the first floor of the hospital, they were talking and laughing, which was very different from the quiet, somber mood they displayed on the second floor. Dr. Antoinette Lasky's final reports noted that
external administration of salt is indicated, and that a child could not eat the quantity of salt voluntarily that would cause the deadly levels presented. Lauren had bruises, scrapes, and abrasions over multiple body surfaces, also multiple blood blisters on fingers into nails, and that the fingers appeared chewed off. Further, that Lauren was malnourished to the point of wasting. She was the average size of a 30-month-old child with no fat stores at all. It is not clear why no care was sought in the face of extreme bizarre behaviors, especially as symptoms worsened over time. Despite all efforts to identify an underlying medical cause for life-threatening condition, there is absolutely no evidence that this is an intrinsic medical condition. Given her overall physical condition, including extreme malnutrition, the injuries noted on nearly all body surfaces, and her extreme lab derangements, these findings are most consistent with physical abuse as evidenced by her physical injuries and most likely administration of some form of salt, possibly as punishment. It is highly likely there is a component of extreme psychological and emotional abuse.
Dr. Lasky's report ended with,
to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, the injuries and findings described above cannot plausibly be explained by accidental injury, pre-existing medical illness, reasonable discipline, or benign events. Therefore, these injuries should be considered consistent with inflicted trauma, that being child abuse.
Ryan admitted to investigators on March 10th that when he picked Lauren up from her mother in August of 2009, she appeared healthy and happy. He said he saw a huge decline in Lauren's condition over the past several months and lamented that he shouldn't have taken her from Amber's custody. An autopsy was conducted on Lauren's body, during which the coroner ruled the manner of death as undetermined and the cause as
complications of hypernatremia or high sodium
with
non-organic failure to thrive
or malnourishment as a contributing cause. When Lauren died, Kaylin was removed from the McConnell's custody and placed into foster care. On March 19th, Amber's attorney, Kimberly Dowling of Muncie, filed a petition for permanent custody of Kaylin, which was ultimately granted in July of the same year, although Kaylin was placed with her mother by the end of March. At some point after Lauren died, Brittany posted this on her MySpace page.
The best thing in the world is being a mommy. When you look in their eyes and see the love they have for you, that is an amazing thing. I have three amazing kids. I wouldn't trade them for the world. They are grow up way too fast. You blink your eye and they have changed again. I have two kids of my own and have the chance of raising my beautiful stepdaughter. She is the one who has grown and changed the most over the summer. She is great.
It's as if Lauren never existed. On May 1, 2010, the McConnells and the Lees moved out of the house on South Ebright Street. 2 months after Lauren's death, her older sister, Kaylin, told psychologist Kenneth McCoy that when Lauren got in trouble for being bad, their dad and stepmom
would hit her on the bottom of her feet with a stick
and
make her do jumping jacks, push-ups, and stuff.
She was also punished by being hit with wet towels and forced to hold heavy objects like cans or books with her arms outstretched. Kaylin told the psychologist that Lauren never got hugs or kisses from Ryan or Brittany, adding,
It was scary there. I didn't like the way they hit her. It made me cry.
At last, after 3 months, Ryan and Brittany McConnell were arrested on Friday, June 11, 2010, and transported to Delaware County Jail, where they were held on charges of felony neglect of a dependent resulting in death. Ryan and Brittany's initial court appearances took place on Tuesday, June 15th, at which time a Delaware County judge entered a preliminary plea of not guilty for each of them and approved their request to have public defenders appointed. Ryan McConnell, who is reportedly a bit of a dolt, spoke up once in court when the judge asked if he had any questions about the charges against him. Ryan replied,
"I don't understand why I was charged with that. I didn't intentionally..."
At that point, the judge interrupted him before he could incriminate himself. I imagine there were some eyes rolling in the courtroom that day. The same month, Angie Lee gave the police a statement, while Samra declined to be interviewed. Robert showed up for a police interview, but midway through it, he told them he was in pain and ended up checking into the hospital. Sergeant Gibson said,
"He said he needed to leave and never came back."
There are some other family members that I've tried to interview, gave initial interviews and won't come back in.
Robert Lee's mother, Linda Smith, spoke shortly after the arrests with reporter Phil Sanchez from 24 Hour News. She said,
"I haven't had a decent night's sleep since that baby died."
When Linda saw Lauren in February, she had suspicions.
"I saw her then and there, and I thought, she really lost a lot of weight. And I asked about it, and they said they were taking her to the doctor, and that she was being treated by a physician, and that she was in counseling for an eating disorder. And I said, 5? And they said, yeah, she has an eating disorder."
The next time Linda saw Lauren, it was for the last time in Riley Hospital.
"You could just tell by looking at her, there was nothing left of her. She was skin and bone. She had all of these things all over her head. She wasn't breathing right. You could just tell."
Linda told the reporter she thought Lauren's father was innocent.
"I don't know. I know he was working full-time, going to school full-time. I know he wasn't here a lot. I really wish I knew the answer to that question."
Lauren's maternal grandmother, Michelle Maddox, told the reporter,
"She was kept from the family that loved her and would have taken care of her. This has been hell on our side of the family. I believe they were deliberately hiding from our side of the family. Ryan didn't even call Amber when Lauren was admitted to Riley Hospital. A cousin did."
Michelle said she thought the stories of Lauren's behavior issues were either made up or
something that was trauma-induced. How do you develop a mental illness that quickly unless it's caused by abuse?
As for Ryan, Michelle said she
finds it hard to believe that he is the one who assaulted Lauren, but it doesn't make him any less responsible. Neglect means you failed to do something.
Others also expressed doubt that Ryan was directly responsible for administering Lauren's physical abuse. His cousin, Steve Shreves, told a reporter that if anyone was abusing Lauren, it wasn't her dad.
"Ryan's just not that type of person."
Many family members stood behind Ryan and Brittany and planned to do so at least until more details were released. Lauren's uncle, Ron Shreves, said,
"I'm not surprised that they were picked up or anything like that. What surprises me is the charges that they're getting on them. A lot of people don't realize that she was at the Ball Hospital the night before going to Riley Hospital, and they released her. I don't blame anybody. I don't know what happened."
Lauren's loss, Ron said, devastated the family.
"Our family is torn apart. You got half of them that believe one way, and the other half another thing."
Ron himself planned to support Lauren's father and stepmother when they went to court.
"They are my family, and I don't think anybody was looking to kill her little 5-year-old baby."
Brittany's uncle, Anthony Rice, told the Star Press that the exercises Lauren was allegedly forced to do were actually voluntary, and that Lauren was involved in a wrestling program through the Muncie Pal Club.
"That's where the push-ups and sit-ups and jumping jacks come into play. They did it for fun."
Anthony denied the allegations that Lauren was hit, beaten, or forced to hold heavy items with arms outstretched, and said his niece and her husband had done everything they could to get Lauren physical and emotional help. As for Lauren's mother, Amber, she was most certainly not supporting the suspects. She had one message for the people of Central Indiana, which she spread through a telephone interview with Fox 59 News in June of 2010.
"Do not let this happen to another kid."
She pleaded with the public,
"To everybody, if you ever see a child that you think is being abused, even if you have your doubts, please contact Child Protective Services."
Amber, who still lived in Knoxville, Tennessee at the time, and in fact still does to this day, said,
"The only reason that Lauren ended up out of my custody is because when I went to my divorce proceeding, I did not have an attorney to represent me. I mean, you've got your children, and you're a good mother of them, and a judge says, 'All right, we're going to give custody to the dad.'"
In June, after Ryan and Brittany were arrested, Sergeant Gibson said.
There are a whole lot more family members who could be held accountable, but how far do we go? Do we arrest everybody? We're behind on other cases and understaffed.
I mean, you arrest anyone who contributed to the crime, right? Am I missing something here? Sergeant Gibson also said they had no intention of launching investigations into healthcare workers, including doctors and nurses, who treated Lauren in her final months and failed to report her injuries to CPS. On the evening of June 18, 2010, hundreds of people, adults and children alike, gathered outside the former McConnell Lee home at 2304 South Ebright Street in Muncie to remember Lauren, bringing with them flowers, balloons, pictures, and toys. Some wore T-shirts printed with the slogan,
"In loving memory of Lauren Michelle McConnell, in Jesus' loving arms."
Organizers of the vigil urged attendees, many of whom did not know Lauren or her family, to write messages in a condolence book which would later be given to Amber Huggins, and to make donations to help pay Amber's travel expenses to attend criminal court proceedings in her daughter's case. I think I'll pause here because there's a lot more left of Lauren's story, including a ton of horrific details that came out in court. I'll pick up where I left off next Tuesday in episode 28, Lauren McConnell, Part 2. That's it for this week, guys. Join me next week for the conclusion of Lauren's story. If you like the show, please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. And please subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildren.pod@gmail.com. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at www.sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes and become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter at STLCPod. View photos related to today's case on Facebook and Instagram. Read more about today's case and many others at SufferTheLittleChildrenBlog.com. This podcast was written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music. Other music and sound effects for the show were created using sounds from AudioJungle.net. Hug your babies a bit closer tonight. Until next week, bye guys.